Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Hello and welcome to the first Squawker Talker podcast of 2022. The early weeks of January are never the most exciting, but here on the Talker, we are back in business, taking a weekly look at a major talking point in Premier League football. This week is the turn of Manchester United and, crucially, what is on the horizon at Old Trafford in 2022. Ralph Rangnick may end his stay in charge this summer and may make the move upstairs, but it could stretch on. At the moment, nobody knows exactly what is going on with Ralph. But despite that situation and that bit of uncertainty, one thing is for sure. United face some big, big decisions both on and off the pitch in the months to come. So with that in mind, we take a look at some of the key talking points for United and ask the key question, how do you fix Manchester United? Replacements for Nemanja Matic, as United look to source a long-term solution to their perennial number six dilemma. What's next for Marcus Rashford after a mixed 12 months for the England man? And Mo's best mate Aaron Wan-Bissaka also gets some airtime as we check in to see if he can survive the Old Trafford clear out. Right, plenty to get through, and it's all United today. My name's Fergal Brennan, and joining me to talk things about United, all things United, as ever, we have Squawker's chief football writer, Mohamed Butt. Mo, how's things?
Yeah, they're pretty good. Looking forward to mounting a robust and vigorous defence of Aaron Wan-Bissaka later in the podcast. It's going to be good, guys. I've got his back.
That's going to be difficult. I'm looking forward to that. We're going to have that in part three. So we're going to go Matic, Rashford, and then Wan-Bissaka. Alongside Mo, we also have the Independent Northern football correspondent, Mark Critchley. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm good, Fergal. Thank you very much. I'm very much looking forward to this robust defence of Aaron Wan-Bissaka. I'm super excited for it.
Hopefully, Mo's defence of Aaron Wan-Bissaka can be better than Aaron Wan-Bissaka's defence of Manchester United. But we're going to look forward to that. Let's not have any spoiler alerts on that one. Matic, first and foremost. Mo, I'm going to go to you first on this because you've written a splendid piece, which is available on squawker.com, about the Serbian and how Manchester United could look to replace him, the players that could fill the void that has been left by his ageing limbs. Now, to be fair to Matic, he's 33, he's got a huge amount of miles on the clock, he's been massively successful at Chelsea, came to United and did a very, very good job in his early days. But it's been on a downward spiral in terms of the regularity of playing time at Manchester United. And one of the big giveaways in that is the amount of 90 minutes that he's completed since he's joined the club. It's been on a downward curve, 34, 27, 17, 12, and then so far this season, just 7. So it's all heading in one direction, but he's under contract until 2023. Unless a buyer can be found, he's probably going to be knocking around the club as an experienced head. But based on what we've seen, not just under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, but even in the early days under Ralph Rangnick, the position of the number six role, the holding midfield role that Matic did so well for so long, needs to be fixed because the amount of stick and plasters that have been put over it is just not cutting it, and United need a long-term solution.
United needed number six since Michael Carrick fell off, my friend. This is not a new... And before Carrick, it was age as well. Roy Keane fell off in like 2004-ish, and then they didn't really have one until Carrick came along, and even then he wasn't really one that Owen Hargreaves came along, and United had a very amazing midfield for 1 year, won the league, won the Champions League. And then Hargreaves obviously fell to pieces injury-wise. But Carrick got better and better. And Carrick and Scholes was a great partnership. Carrick was the number six. Amazing passer. Really, really good. Not quite that top level, that Busquets level, Pirlo, Xabi Alonso, not that second level either. But he was like third level, you know, very good. But then he fell off. And then there was no one. Then Matic came along. Matic was never even really that kind of player, even at Chelsea. He was more of a box-to-box defender. As I know, he had great skill in the duels, in tackling and everything, but he was never like a holding midfielder to sit there and spray around. Schweinsteiger was the guy. I mean, if you remember the hype and the furore about Bastian Schweinsteiger when he signed in preseason, where he was literally standing there telling every single one of his teammates, stand here, no, stand there, coaching them during the game. You're thinking Schweinsteiger's going to be the guy, but then he's never stayed fit, so on and so forth. So you might have needed a midfielder for a long time. This is not new. Matic's decline physically has exacerbated the issue. And what's amusing is almost the way that United have recruited in midfield has it's made Matic look better than he is. Like, he's their best number six, and he's not that good. But he can pass the ball forward, perceptively break lines of press with his passing, which no other United midfielder can do consistently. I've said consistently because occasionally Fred will pick out a peach of a pass like he did last night for Anthony Elanga. Occasionally he has that in his locker. And McTominay is very strange because he oscillates wildly between looking like a shaved bear and looking like the kind of, you know, Brian Robson reincarnate. But that depends entirely on opposition. You see, if you're playing a team that's very direct and open and runs at United with an intense press around Marcus system, he has the dribbling ability and the physical frame and the speed to just break that press not with a pass. He can't do it with the dribble. He did it last night in the build-up for the third United goal. Wonderful tackle, won the ball back, dribbled through a press, and then released the ball. Really, really good play. He's really good at that. But if the team sits in front of him and just says, go on, break us down, he doesn't really have the ammunition to do that, the weaponry to do that. And Fred does occasionally, but it's very inconsistent, right? So Matic is the best guy to do that, to play those passes behind the lines, between the lines. So they had to replace him because he's getting older and he can barely last, like you said, he's not even playing 90 minutes much. He says he can barely last 90 minutes. He can barely last 60 minutes. And it's a problem. And also you have to just keep your fingers crossed and hope that you get your catching Matic on a good day, because you might not even catch him on a good day. He might play rubbish because it's just, he's a declining player. But it's a very important position for United to reinforce. And there are a few options out there that they need to look at. I mean, there's rumours that Ragnick wanted one in January. I don't know if they're going to get one in January. I mean, a couple of their targets are at the Cup of Nations right now, so I don't know. But they need someone. They need someone in January, frankly, and then they definitely need someone in the summer.
Well, looking at some of the names, and you flagged it up in the piece that you've written, there are options out there. The likelihood is they're not really going to be attainable in the January market. At the time of recording, we're edging ever closer to the window being slammed shut. So it's probably going to be an objective for the summer. And obviously there's still the uncertainty about whether Ralf Rangnick will be in charge, whether he'll be moving upstairs, whether there'll be an extension to his deal as head coach. So given the fact that, you know, you've done some digging around in terms of the numbers, not the name to be chased or the profile of player to be chased, the right player for the right job, who are the candidates that United could and should be going for?
Well, to me, there were five outstanding candidates when I wrote the piece. Well, six. One of which was Declan Rice, which is obviously not going to happen in January. But I used Rice as the template. He's 6'1". They want a tall midfielder. Rice at 6'1" is probably the low end of what you can call tall. Really, 6'2" is tall in football terms. But let's just assume right there, Rice is the low end of the... But Rice is the template, because Rice is amazing, right? He's having an amazing season. And he's a wonderful player. So I compared every player to Rice. I used him as the template, but he was never going to move in January. So the other options were, obviously, there's Monaco's Aurélien Tchouaméni, who, as you know, is fantastic. And when you compare his output to Rice, it's just, he obliterates Rice in terms of possessions won, tackles won, fouls won, forward passes into the final third. And these are really important things you want from your midfielder. You're progressing to progress the ball with his passing, right? That's what United sorely need, is because they've got guys who, like I said, McTominay can run with it. He can do that. Bruno, you play Bruno in midfield, you're playing a form of a 4-3-3 as he did yesterday. Bruno can definitely run with it. Bruno can pick out the passes too, but Bruno is a dynamic player. You want someone that sits at the base and wins it, recycles possession very, very intelligently. Tchouaméni can do that. Exceptional player, really good defensive, really solid defensively. Other option is Paulinho, the Portuguese guy. I'm probably saying that wrong. He's really good. He's big, tall guy, 6'3". I like him a lot. He's got, again, he's not quite as dynamic as Tchouaméni, but he's a great interceptor, a great recovering the ball and moving it forward. Again, not quite as dynamic and not quite as rounded as a playmaker, but he's still quality. Renato Tapia at Celta Vigo is another one. I think really kind of underrated because he's from Peru and no one really thinks of Peru for some reason. Peru's great, guys. Wonderful kits. Best kits in international football. And he's a good player. Again, not quite as dynamic a player as Tchouaméni, right? But more gettable. Because Tchouaméni, by the way, is going to be courted by everybody this summer. You know, I was thinking, you know, I could nip in January early and grab him. He's going to be, everyone's after this guy, Real Madrid, PSG, you name it. So it's going to be a war for Tchouaméni in the summer. So you know, you want to get in there ahead of everyone else and make something happen. And after Tapia, more gettable. I think his buyout clause is on like 30 million, 25 million. So it could be a quick, cheapest chips option to bring him in now and have him fill in, because he would do a better job than pretty much any of United midfielders. Again, not as dynamic as Rice, not as dynamic as Tchouaméni in terms of tackling, but he's great interceptor of the ball, great reader of play, recovers the ball, wins it back very well. The final option, for me, the best option, although he's currently in the Cup of Nations, so probably not going to happen, is Ibrahim Sangare, the Ivorian midfielder, PSV. He's just sensational. This guy can do literally everything. He's absolutely incredible. He wins the ball, passes it forward, dribbles the ball, reads the play, intercepts the play. He just does everything. Sangare is really, really, really impressive. He's quite tall as well. He is, what is, I believe, he's 6'3". He's 24, so he's not quite like a young pup. So he's getting into his, like, where you would call his prime period. To me, this guy's prime is absolutely in the right spot to make a big move to a big club, and he would absolutely thrive under Rangnick's system. Of course, there's also Amadou Hadara, who United keep repeatedly linked with because, of course, he plays in German football. Rangnick knows German football. And there's Jude Bellingham, who, we all know is sensational, but I don't think Bellingham's going anywhere this either January or in the summer, because I think this summer is Erling Haaland's turn to leave Dortmund. And then Bellingham will be next summer. So I don't think Bellingham's going anywhere. So I think you can forget about that. But yeah, Haidara is very good as well. The other option, my last option was, I didn't put him in the piece because I thought, maybe not. He's not that great. It's Dennis Zakaria, which really annoyed me because I should have put him in the piece because his contract's expiring in the summer. So he's probably the most likely to either move now for a fee or to come in the summer for free. He's very good. He's, again, not quite as defensively solid as Rice is, but really good with the ball. Moves it forward really well. Really would fit that sort of elegant thing that United want with the passer, who can distribute it forward and get it moving, and would really fit in with Rangnick's system. And he's huge. I think he's 6'3". So those are the guys. Those are the main candidates. If I'm United, I'm looking at Sangare or Tchouaméni for obviously the best talent. Rice, I think, is even in the summer, I think Rice is unattainable. I think West Ham are going to put such a massive fee on him. Only Chelsea will really be in the market for him. Tchouaméni or Sangare are the standouts for me. Tapia maybe now in January would be a clever pickup. Same with Zakaria. But in the summer, I mean, for me, you've got to go for Sangare or Tchouaméni and just, you know, build, because Pogba's probably going to leave as well. So you're building the midfield around that guy. That's your anchor. And then you've got McTominay and Fred as your runners. And you've got Bruno Fernandes as your Shazam, your difference maker.
As your Shazam. Right, Mark, looking at the picture in terms of United and how they want to progress as a system, we've talked about this quite a few times. The best teams in the Premier League, the best teams in Europe, by and large, do play with a sole pivot of sorts. Liverpool, Man City and Chelsea all play with a kind of traditional six. Jorginho, Fabinho and Rodri or Fernandinho previously with Manchester City. And one of the most telling stats that we've dug out in terms of United and this idea that it's not about the system, it's about the individual making the tackles in the right area of the pitch. United are in the bottom four for tackles won in the attacking third. The only teams below them are the current bottom three in the Premier League. And even more telling, so far this season, United are second bottom for tackles won in the midfield third. So that shows that there is not a natural ball winner in the middle of the pitch for all of Fred and McTominay's positives and Bruno Fernandes getting back in and helping out. So this idea that, oh, Matic doesn't play that much, it's not that much of a big deal. It doesn't matter that Matic is not playing that much. What matters is nobody's winning.
Spring is sprung and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. The ball in midfield.
Well, I wasn't aware of those stats, but they are pretty damning. I think you always have to be slightly careful with that stuff because you have to remember United are a team that will have a lot of possession, and therefore, you know, maybe those defensive stats will show up a little bit different to other teams who have less of the ball. But it is still startling that they're that far down And it does speak to a lack of ball winners, as you say. It's been a problem that they've... It's kind of stood out for quite a few seasons now, as Mo referred to. They haven't had that number six that you associate with a lot of other teams. And I think it was really the... It should really have been the priority going into the transfer window last summer. I know there was a lot of noise around, you know, the different players they needed to get. When Varane came in, people thought they needed a centre-back. They obviously needed a right winger, and they got Sancho, even though he's not playing there. And then there was Ronaldo. Those that never really, to me, felt like the defining priority. It felt like you really wanted that central midfielder. And now you're going into a summer where we're talking about Matic here, and he's the kind of focus of this conversation. But as we rightly pointed out, Pogba's contract is expiring as well. You're probably going into this summer, you need two. So, and that two depends on whether you're going to play with one as a sitter or you're going to play with a pair. So Ranić, the last couple of weeks, has said, we're looking at now going towards a 4-3-3 and we're playing with a single holding midfielder. And you saw that against Brentford the other night. Whether he sticks to that, I don't know, because he's changing formation week in, week out in the middle of games at the minute, moving to back threes, going back to back fours, threes in midfield. So that kind of inconsistency isn't helping. The fact that we don't know whether Ranić's, well, I think we do know, we can be pretty certainly say that he's not going to be the head coach next season. But, you know, whether the extent of his influence on the club and how he'll be directing things, that is still unclear in terms of what kind of role this consultancy role is going to be. So, I mean, of the players that Mo's mentioned, Tchouaméni was a guy whose name came up quite a bit last summer and it was kind of played down a little bit. But again, I would almost look at that more as a result of the midfielder not really being seen as a priority and them going for Sancho, Varane, the centre-back, the right winger. If there was a possibility to do it again, having looked at his stats and being aware of him last summer, you just feel like there's going to be a lot of teams that are in for him, and United could be one of them, perhaps. Rice, though, is the one that I feel like, especially when Solskjaer was manager, he was one that we're particularly keen on. Again, like Mo, I would kind of doubt whether they can stomach the kind of bid that would ultimately get him over the line then. And you're looking at somebody like Chelsea where he already has those links, whether they go there. With Rice, I think he's been brilliant this season, and he's come on and improved a lot, and he's been arguably one of the few players from England's Euro 2020 who's actually gone and improved this year and carried on that form into the season. I do think you almost want a player that's got a bit more of a passing range and a passing ability around them. And I think that's always been the question with Rice. He's improved in that as well this season, but that's still a question there. He's really good at bringing the ball forward, dribbling, but I don't know whether that's
enough. I was going to say, do you not think Rice is just a better version of McTominay, right? Like, same sort of skill set, just obviously much better at it. Like, the passing limitation is still there.
I think he's got a higher ceiling than McTominay, and that's not trying to do discredit to McTominay. I think he's got a much higher ceiling than him. I think he will offer more. But again, like, if we're talking about a player that plays as a single kind of pivot, single holding midfielder, Rice hasn't been doing that. He's been alongside Suchek, and he's been alongside Phillips for England. So it's, again, this is all dependent on what kind of player you're after. I think that the guy that they would want more than anybody else is Bellingham, because they made that move for him a couple of years ago. They had his parents come into the training ground. Solskjaer was really keen on him. Him and Rice were the two that he looked at and was very much, you know, he wanted to bring them to the club. But again, I think Mo makes a brilliant point about the way that Dortmund operate. And it's very much, and you saw this with Sancho, it's very much we allow one to go and then the other has to wait. And they've got this production line of young talent coming through that they develop, and that's their business model. And this year, I'd be amazed if it wasn't Haaland, and if that doesn't have an effect on Bellingham's, you know, availability. So they need, like I say, maybe one and probably two. And there's a lot of different options out there. Again, Haidara, I think, is one that Ranić definitely likes, but I don't personally see that happening this month. I think it's unlikely. And so your options start to become quite limited, and it's going to be a very interesting summer to see who would they eventually get over the line.
My two pence on this, in terms of Declan Rice, is that all of the positive things that have been said about Declan Rice completely contradict what Manchester United need in a midfielder. As Mark said, the bulk of his football last season was as a two with Thomas Suchek. again this season. The big conversation surrounding West Ham is that Thomas Suchek's not been getting the goals that he got last season. And the reason for that is because Declan Rice is bombing on and creating chances for a really impressive West Ham forward line. So thus, if United are looking for someone to sit and mind the shop, Declan Rice wasn't doing it last season. And in fact, this season is being actively told, don't do that. Get forward and go and cause havoc higher up the pitch. So again, Chelsea are a factor in, and the money that West Ham would ask is obviously major as well. But it just, it again, flies in this face of chasing the name rather than chasing the numbers, chasing the profile of Declan Rice rather than the player that Manchester United need.
Yeah, we saw at the Euros he can sit. He can sit and hold. He can do that. But honestly, if you're going to try, I mean, I'm not going to suggest this because I don't want Leeds fans trying to kill me again, but Calvin Phillips is the guy. Calvin Phillips is, for me, every time I watch him, I'm like, this is the guy United need. Single pivot, hard as nails, amazing passer, brilliant. But obviously, he's very Leeds. And as Leeds fans often remind me when I say this on Twitter, he probably wouldn't cancel the move. He probably wouldn't want to do the move, which is fair enough. I'm not knocking the guy for it. I think he's a sensational footballer. But yeah, to me, that's why I never put him in the piece. Never mention him at all, because Leeds fans just don't like him when I do that. And I understand that. And he probably wouldn't even agree to them if he's very Leeds. But he's sensational. Rice can play single pivot. But yeah, like you said, what he's done this year to grab the headlines is not what United would need him to do at the club. Like, he would just be a better version. I mean, don't get me wrong. Again, like Mark said, you could play him with McTominay, with Bruno Fernandes, Declan Rice, and a holding midfielder is really, really good. That sounds, but then again, if you come into signing two midfielders and Rice is going to cost 80 to 100 million, that's a lot of money if you've then got to also buy another holding midfielder. So, yeah.
I think you have to take a bit of the creative burden, sorry, off Bruno. Because and the way it was set up now and the way it was set up last season, you had Bruno pulling the strings on everything and you had Shaw contributing, but you didn't have anybody else. And
that's why the Europa League final went away this day, because Unai Emery was like, oh, if we just mark Bruno Fernandes, they can't do anything. And that's what happened. They just marked Bruno Fernandes. If Rashford was fit, maybe he had done something. He wasn't fit either. And so with unfit Rashford and Bruno marked, United had nothing in the game. And yeah, so you need to diversify. That's what Sancho's meant to do, but then he's not playing for some reason.
I think it's pretty safe to say that for every Alan Smith, there's a Calvin Phillips. I can't see Phillips doing an Alan Smith and going to United. But stranger things have happened. But I think as it stands, I can't see it happen. Right, we're going to move on to Marcus Rashford, the second featured part of today's United podcast. And I've titled this little section as, how do you solve a problem like Marcus Mo? And in reality, I don't mean it like that. I'm just a sucker for a play on words, because for me, Marcus Rashford is one of the nicest human beings you could ever come across. But the reality is his performances for United across the last 18 months have dropped. Now, they've also dropped because of expectation and what his expected ceiling was when he burst through, when Louis van Gaal, and I'm going to say this, accidentally just put him in the team and just kind of went with it, and it obviously went well, and Rashford's ability and his excellence was the defining feature of what then got him into the first team on a regular basis. But we look into this season now, obviously he's had issues with injury, he's gone away, he's had surgery, that's meant that he's missed a portion of the campaign so far. And again, we're lucky enough to have another brilliant piece written by yourself on Mr. Rashford. And what you focused on is a point that I agree with Rashford, is that injuries, form, all these other issues that are kind of swirling around Marcus Rashford and Manchester United are not the defining problems behind why his form's dipped off. It is more straightforward in that he's simply being played out of position.
It's not out of position necessarily, as I said in the piece. It's just he's not playing a position. Last season, he played over about 60% of his minutes left wing. Right, occasionally he'd play up front, but United switched to a front two, and he had a few hundred minutes, like two games playing right wing, right, which didn't really work, and he scored the one goal. Obviously, it was an amazing goal against Wolves, last minute deflected winner, but he's a productive player on the left wing, right? Jose Mourinho said it years ago now. He's a player coming off the left because he wants the game in front of him. He runs at the goal. He doesn't hold the ball up, doesn't turn his back to goal, doesn't do that sort of thing. He's not number nine in the classic sense. But yeah, there are two problems mainly with Rashford. Right? Well, three. Well, we don't know if there's three. There's two, definitely one maybe. I mean, we don't know if there's anything going on in his personal life. Like, by now, people should come to realise that if a footballer mysteriously just vanishes off the face of the earth in terms of their form, there might be something going on that we don't know about. You know, and I don't mean like Marcus Rashford helping poor children eat food. That's amazing. He should keep doing that. I mean like his actual personal life. Like, maybe there's something, maybe there isn't something. We don't know, so we shouldn't be judging. That's the first thing. Always take that into account. Always take that into account. Jesse Lingard's a great example. Everyone was on his back for years. Turns out, oh, he was suffering through some really hard personal trauma, personal issues. You know. Anyway, the second thing is injury is a factor. It's boring to say. It really is because, like, oh, God, injuries. But, like, he had, like you said, he played 2 years, I think, Mark, with pain. I think is you know, like back injury, shoulder injury, foot injury. Like, I mean, back injuries are debilitating for athletes anyway, right? Shoulder injury for a sprinter, you've got to hold off players, you've got to fall on your shoulder a lot. And then a foot injury is a footballer. So it's like literally three of the most, you know, impactful, let's say. I mean, thankfully, they weren't muscular, but three really impactful injuries, right, that are going to take a lot out of you as a player who, and as a player who, like Rashford, who is a big impact player, a lot of aggressive sprints, a lot of dynamic football, a lot of energetic football, not really a sort of thoughtful cerebral player, although he can be very clever and intelligent in his movement. He's not like a Riquelme just strolling around the field. Like, Riquelme can have a back injury and a shoulder and you wouldn't even notice because he used to stroll around the pitch. Rashford's a dynamic sprinter. You can't, you know, you notice that sort of thing. But the final issue is, again, yeah, positioning, right? It's not that he's out of position even. It's just that he doesn't have a position. I think Rashford's smart enough to play right wing, smart enough to play up front. I think if you put him there for like 5-10 games, said, yeah, go on, Rashford, figure it out. If the rest of the team was also knew what they were doing, I think he could figure it out. The problem is, like, the rest of the team don't know what they're doing. Like Mark says, Ragnick's changing formation every single game. Right. And then in addition to that, you're moving Rashford around every single game. And he's coming back from injury. He's got, you know, so who knows what else is going on in his life. So, you know, you need consistency to get back to your best. Right. And he's not got any consistency in his position. His minutes this season have been an almost even split. Let me just confirm this. 132 minutes before yesterday's game, 132 minutes as a left winger, 192 as a right winger, 262 as a striker in the 4-2-2-2 formation. Like, there's no consistency there. What, you know, of course he's not playing well. Like, the guy needs a role. And look, it was interesting. He came on yesterday against Brentford and played on off the right in a 4-3-3 and obviously got the goal. Very nice finish, by the way, for a guy who's struggling with confidence. Very nice finish. And you're sort of thinking, okay, that's going to help him. That's going to help him come on. But then even in the game, even in the little cameo he had at the end of the game, Ragnick changed his position. He moved into the middle. Like, even in this little cameo, like, you can't just let him start playing one position. You have to move him. And it's just that's what drives me mad for Marcus Rashford. Because much as, yeah, he needs to buck his ideas up and all this and that and other pull yourself up by your bootstraps talk. And, you know, sure, okay. He's not being put in a position to succeed at all. He hasn't been put into a position to succeed, I would argue, since Lou Valcal left Man United. Every subsequent manager has made it as hard as possible for Marcus Rashford to do well as it could possibly be, except for like Solskjaer in that initial period. Everyone else just makes it as hard as possible for him, just plays him through every injury. Like, come on, right, go on, like, get out there. Because he's the kind of guy, he will go out there and run himself into the ground for you, which is what he did for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Like, literally ran himself into, like, he couldn't even walk. Had to have back surgery in the middle of the season. If the pandemic hadn't happened, we would have noticed it. No one really notices because obviously he had that back surgery and he was out while the football stopped. So no one's really sort of processed the fact that he had major surgery and was out for a good few months because we didn't miss him because football stopped. It's, yeah, Rashford to me is a really, really, really great player, really amazing human being, really great player who just needs consistency. Just give him consistency and we'll see the old Rashford emerge slowly, not straight away, but slowly.
Mark, the numbers are important when it comes to Rashford and his performances. And you look at his two best seasons in terms of goal scoring at Manchester United, 2019-20 and 2020-21, 17 goals in 19-20 and 11 in 2021. And as Mo points out, he's on about a rolling average of in and around 60% of games where he started on the left-hand side of a front three. So that does look to be the most potent position to have a fit and firing and confident Marcus Rashford on. But Mo's obviously looked at the numbers and in terms of how that impacts Rashford's game, but numbers don't exist on their own. Manchester United is a club full of soap opera drama at the moment, particularly when it comes to their attacking players. Ralf Rangnick has to manage this, he has to manage egos, he has to manage personalities, and he has to manage the team. So alongside all of these issues with Rashford in terms of injuries, in terms of getting in the team and the right position, how does Ralf Rangnick manage all these players and fit them into a system? He has Jadon Sancho, who arguably shares the same best position with Marcus Rashford. He has Cristiano Ronaldo and all the baggage that comes with him. And he also has Cavani, he has Greenwood, he has Mata, he has Lingard. All of these players vying to get into the team and the potential that they might bring in another new face just to add another problem to his list.
I don't think they can sign any more forwards. They've got far too many.
They can give it a go.
It would be purely decadent if they went out and signed another player playing that forward.
And Martial, line. Throw Martial into that as well.
Martial. I wasn't even keeping count anymore, to be honest. I didn't realise you missed him off. So I think that if you asked Rashford himself, he would say that the left-hand side cutting in is his best position. Everything that Moses said is correct in terms of, like, he feels that that would be where he's played his best football and where he's had his best returns over the years. It's where he feels he's strongest. I think with Rashford that, like, you look at almost the timeline of this team over the past 3 years. If you go right to the start of the Ole, well, let's start at the end, actually. If you look at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's era, time in charge, I think you can split it up into three sections. You had this past season, which was very much the Cristiano Ronaldo era, where he came in and suddenly everything that is, he kind of defines the whole team and takes all the attention. And the team has to adapt to have in him and the way they play. Before that, it's very much Bruno Fernandes' team. Up until around the midpoint of Ollie's first season, basically when Fernandes came in, that era, he's pulling the strings, he's doing everything, as we mentioned before, he's the creative hub and really the only creative player on the team. And before that, you know, you had Ollie's little run as caretaker, but in terms of his permanent time, I do think that's kind of where Rashford was the most important player at the club and the one that Solskjaer would lean on and depend on. And the results weren't great, which is, you know, it's not a criticism of Rashford, but the results weren't great, but they almost needed him at all times. And I remember there was a spell just before Bruno came in around January 2020. It's when he started picking up those back problems, when they started to become noticeable. They had a FA Cup tie against Wolves and they played Wolves like six times in a month. And it was totally depressing to watch Man United versus Wolves 0-0 every week. But and he brought Rashford on in this replay, in this third round replay, for like 20 minutes, and he did his back and had to go off, get substituted. And it was just at that moment where you think, this team is really becoming very dependent on one player here to dig them out of holes. And Rashford was doing it. I think he scored two against Norwich just the week before, and he was doing it, and they were grinding out results and keeping competitive in the top four race just about because of the performances that he was putting in. But basically, ever since then, he's become a slightly more peripheral figure in the team. And, you know, you say there, last season, 2020-2021, I think you said, was one of his best goal-scoring seasons of 11. For me, he started that season well, but you could tell that the performances and maybe the injuries or whatever were starting to take their toll about the midpoint of that season. He had that game against Leipzig where he came on and scored a hat-trick, and it was incredible, and he'd started brilliantly. But after that point, you could see some of the issues that we're discussing now. And I think, you know, in hindsight, there's a question of really whether he should have played as much as he did towards the end of last season when the back and the shoulder and then the foot started taking the toll. And then he went to the Euros as well and barely had a kick until he had that very last kick with the penalty shootout. I mean, it just didn't feel like that was the correct preparation. And I know he would never have changed it. He would always going to have gone to the Euros and would always have played every minute for United in that final run. In fact, I remember actually asking him at the end of the Europa League final. We got him in the mix zone, the virtual mix zone thing, and I asked him about the injuries, and he would never put it down to that. He would always say that, you know, he put his body on the line and that this was more a question of the team having to want it enough and put more effort in and keep going and go again. And he gave that TV interview after that game as well that went viral, where he was very emotional after it as well. So he would never attribute it to these injuries. But I think that ultimately you were just looking at a player who just played too much football and been lent on too much for too long a period. And that's been taking its toll now. And he's kind of suffered as a result, you know, like, because you've seen Sancho's come in. We're talking about all these players they've got now. His importance, if you like, isn't as great as it once was. He isn't the automatic starter that he once was. He isn't the most important player in the team that he once was. And it's all very interesting because his contract runs out, not this season, but the end of next. Now, the thing at United is they always have a clause to extend it by one, and you can bet they're not going to let Marcus Rashford go for free. But he's 24 years old, and, you know, there is a discussion there to be had about what is his role in this team going forward, and is it as a starter that he probably expects to be and probably has been for many years now, but is that going to be the case in the years to come? It's an open question, and it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with it.
I think Anthony Elanga really makes it all a very interesting situation, because I think before Anthony Elanga showed up, I thought Rashford will eventually just walk back into the team, not because of less anything, but he's the only player out of all of the legions of attackers United have that make runs in behind. Greenwood should be doing it, but Greenwood has spent too much time playing right winger. Poor kid has losing his striker instincts. He needs time up front to really regain those, because obviously he's an amazing shoot off both foot, great guy, but he spent so long playing right wing, he doesn't make the runs that strikers should make anymore. Not enough of them anyway. Needs to go back up front, but of course they signed number 7, so anyway. So Rashford is the only guy that makes those runs. And Ragnick even said after, I can't remember what game it was now, he said, you know, we were finding him in the box. It was good. And we stopped doing that. And I was like, well, this is what you need him for. But Elanga makes those runs. Like, Elanga is younger, faster. I don't know if he's faster than Rashford, but he's young, he's fast. He's not got about 5 different injuries. And he's not as world-weary as Rashford, having been basically used and abused like Rashford was. And yeah, he can make those runs. And that really is going to... I think that's almost what Rashford scored when he came. It's like, I've got to fight for my place now. Not because before he would be dropped and it'd be formed, but you knew he'd get back in the team because ultimately none of the other forwards do what he does. Especially if you're playing a 4-3-3, you need the forwards that are going to run in behind. Especially if one of your forwards is 36 years old and can't sprint to save his life anymore, right? You need forwards that can run. So Rashford's back in the team automatically, but Elanga means he's not. Elanga is a viable, genuine... I mean, he's really good. He's a genuinely viable option. He's not as good a dribbler as Rashford. And he's nowhere near as good a player as Rashford, but he can run. And so now you're like, Rashford's USP almost is not there anymore. Like, Elanga can do that. So Rashford is going to have to up his game quicker than I think he would have liked to. Let's hope he can do it. I think he can do it. And I think, as like you said, it's just a matter of time. Get over the injuries, and I think he'll find his way back to full form. And the other thing with Rashford, which I think no other United player except for Cristiano and Bruno can really say, is that he's clutch as hell. Like, big games, he's right there. Like, finals, right there. Semi, you know, big game. Like, there are so many in that United team that are anti-clutch, and De Gea, to be fair, as well, that, you know, that are not, you wouldn't trust them when the chips are down. Like, You wouldn't trust them not to panic. Victor Lindelof, I'm looking at you. You know, but big game player. Rashford's a huge big game player. Like, I mean, that's what, like, you mentioned it when he was carrying the team in the pre-Bruno phase. That's all he was doing. He was like, big games, park the bus, hit on the break to Rashford, goal. You know, and he would do it. In Liverpool, we did it to Liverpool. We did it to Liverpool, and they were the most invincible team in the world. Did it to City. How many times has he done it to City? Goodness gracious. You know, so, yeah. It's just a matter of time, but Elanga's going to put pressure on, real pressure on Rashford to get back to his best quicker than we expect him to, because Elanga can do what Rashford does. And that's going to give... He gives Ragnick a viable option. Like, the balance of the... I don't like it when Cristiano's in the team, because I don't think he fits and he messes up everything, but the balance of Greenwood, Cristiano and Elanga, that makes sense. You know, I'd rather it was Sancho, Greenwood and Elanga, but basically you need a runner in behind from one of the front three, and he's that guy. Right now they start putting Greenwood up front, having Sancho on the right. That's going to be a serious front three in a pressing system as well. They press like the second half against Brentford, so, but yeah, Rashford just has to work at it, man. Has to work harder, has to really focus.
I agree with Mark. It's going to be a big 6-12 months for him, but I can't see anything other than Rashford in United red. And I'm not for a second thinking that he is going to leave or anything like that. But yeah, he probably does need to get back up to speed quicker than he thought, which, based on previous evidence of how quickly he can pick up an injury, is probably a terrible idea. So hopefully someone is telling Rashford to take his time. Right, we're going to move on to the last little section for the podcast today, which is Aaron Wan-Bissaka. And Mo, as his best pal, as his number one fan, as his cheerleader, we're obviously going to ask you about this first. Now, to give both sides of the story on Wan-Bissaka, I do think that he is suffering because a big fat light is being shone on him, because we're in the age of the Premier League fullback, where we've got some of the best fullbacks in world football playing in the Premier League. Trent Alexander-Arnold, Andy Robertson, Yao Cancelo, Reece James, Marcus Alonso, Kyle Walker, etc., etc., etc. And they are also now becoming kind of quasi-playmakers within the systems that they're playing in, because they've got fantastic managers and fantastic coaching systems. Aaron Wan-Bissaka's ace card all the time has been his defending, his ability in one-on-one situations, his ability to be defensively relatively sound. But he still comes in for a lot of criticism. So, Mo, what is it that you see about Aaron Wan-Bissaka that the rest of us, the great and good, don't see about Aaron Wan-Bissaka at Man United?
It's his unique defensive skill set. You know, this is the thing. In terms of defending as a whole, he has weaknesses in his game. He doesn't defend crosses very well coming from the left. Like, Luke Shaw always allows crosses coming in from the left. That's Luke Shaw's big flaw. No one talks about that, by the way. Luke Shaw never defends crosses very well. They always come in. And Wan-Bissaka doesn't ever know, like, where his man is, right? And I think part of that is because he's always playing with Lindelof, and Lindelof is a very weak defender, not commanding. Whereas I think if he played next to Varane or Maguire, they would space like, no, I'm here, you go over there. But we'll see. I think ultimately Wan-Bissaka has been let down by the fact that United never had a very strong coach. I love Solskjaer as a man manager. I think he's great. He's a club legend, obviously, but I don't think he was ever very good in terms of coaching and improving players. I think his idea with Wan-Bissaka was, we'll just play him like a normal wing back, like he's Reece James or something. But he's not Reece James. He doesn't have anything like the skill set Reece James does. He's not a good passer of the ball. That's just pure and simple. He's not a good passer of the ball. If you look at him, what he does best, he's really good at dribbling. He's great at breaking press with his dribbling, not with his passing. Good God, not with his passing. But he can beat a press with his dribble. And he's a sensational defensive player. Like, he's in, since he's joined Man United at the start of, what was it? Start of 2019. In tackles, he has 245 tackles in the Premier League. Only Wilfred Ndidi has more with 271. Right. And this is taking into account the fact that Wan-Bissaka has basically not really played this year. In terms of, he has 148 interceptions. That, I think, is fourth overall in that time frame. So he puts up, he's an obscene defender. He's really, really good, and he's massive. He's been huge for United in transition defense as well. Like, something that does get talked about a lot. The amount of times he kills counterattacks with his pace or with his tracking back and whatnot, and prevents David De Gea having to go into superhero mode. But I can't, you know, you have to acknowledge the truth is he's not good going forward at all. And United have just used him in a way that exposes that, right? You look at other players who aren't necessarily great going forward. Look at Kyle Walker. Kyle Walker's not really great in attack. And when he plays for England, he looks terrible because he hasn't had Pep Guardiola. When Pep Guardiola is telling him what to do, Kyle Walker looks amazing. He doesn't really go forward that often. He stays like relatively close to the halfway line in the half space, underlapping, provides support from midfield, and is great in transition defence. And he's really good at that role. That's coaching, man. Trent Alexander-Arnold is another great example. Obviously, a completely different kind of player to Wan-Bissaka, but Trent Alexander-Arnold is not a great 1v1 defender. He's not a particularly great defender, but he's an exceptional attacking force, like literally one of the best in the world. And so Klopp doesn't put him in a position where he has to be like Reece James, up and down, defending and attacking. He puts him in unique situations where he can attack and someone covers for him, because he understands that I have a unique player here. I need to make the most of what he can do. So with Wan-Bissaka, you know, I have a player who is uniquely brilliant at defending. He's run off Mbappe and Neymar in the same game from his flank. Like those PSG games, they were both trying to attack, and none of them got any change out. I mean, they just ran away to the other side. Neymar beat United at Old Trafford in that game. He did it by running away from Mbappe, from Wan-Bissaka, and running at Harry Maguire. Like, he you know, because he couldn't get anything out of Wan-Bissaka because he's that good defensively. But two things have hurt Wan-Bissaka this season. The first is obviously Solskjaer's continued lack of coaching. We can only assume it is, and lack of work on him, because Wan-Bissaka has gotten worse with every passing season at United, where it's clear he's not being worked on. The second thing is the arrival of Cristiano Ronaldo essentially stopped United from playing deep and hitting on the break, because he can't do that because he's 36, right? And so if United aren't playing back foot counter-attack football, Wan-Bissaka's limitations become more obvious, because again, he's exceptional. Sitting back, come on, come and attack me. Oh, I can tackle you now. Got the ball, launch the counter-attack. There we go, right? He's great at that. When United are playing a bit more on the front foot, as they have to with Cristiano in the team, and as they do now with under Ralf Rangnick, who is very much a front foot kind of player, coach, sorry, like Wan-Bissaka's limitations become exposed. So this is not an argument to say that Wan-Bissaka should be in the United team, because honestly, under Rangnick, probably not. And probably he might have to move in the summer, because I don't think Rangnick plays a very symmetrical kind of system where the fullbacks have to attack and have to be participants in the attack. And Wan-Bissaka is not really built for that. He needs to play in an asymmetric system where he's a defensive player, like Guardiola kind of thing. So he might have to move in the summer, which is very shame, great shame, because I love him a lot. But yeah, that's my defense. He's an amazing, amazing, uniquely amazing and brilliant lockdown defender, one of the best 1v1 defenders in the world. United then, just instead of using him in that unique capacity, have tried to use him like he's any old normal fullback. And as a result, he's been pretty, you know, getting progressively worse, basically.
Looking at the situation with Wan-Bissaka, Mark, and there might be a little bit of recency bias here, because the Brentford game last night, Diogo Dalot at right back was excellent. He got man of the match. Defensively, he was very good, particularly when Brentford tried to do that trick that they do where they lob it into the back post and your fullback needs to get around your centre half and help out and dig out and win headers and just kind of grit and grunt and get over the line. And he was excellent at that. And he was also progressive in the ball, winning the ball, winning interceptions, driving United up on that side of the pitch. And when you look at the best teams, again, to go back in the Premier League, City, Liverpool and Chelsea, they do bring their fullbacks into the game. The fullbacks are not just there to defend, to repel attacks, to get back and help out. No, they come into midfield and they play an active role in progressive building of possession and attacks. Liverpool and City are probably the best examples of that. Chelsea do it quite well with Alonso and James in a different situation. Is there a pressure on United to maybe look to replicate that? And if so, that would mean that it's probably going to be Dalot and arguably even Alex Telles on the other side, because Luke Shaw, for the positives that he brings in terms of assists, Alex Telles just has this ability to raid from deep. He's quicker than Shaw. He gets beyond his opposite fullback more than Shaw. And he gives United that mirror of the other teams where the fullbacks are way more involved in midfield.
I think that United's best fullback pairing as it stands at the minute is Shaw and Dalot.
I agree.
I think that... let's start. Okay, we'll spend a little bit of time on left back. I think what Shaw did last season in terms of, again, like I said, being the guy that would move the ball up the pitch, the only other guy in the team other than Fernandes, made him kind of emerge as almost the second most important player in the team. And he hasn't been great in terms of great. His form hasn't been great this season. He hasn't quite produced those same returns. But I still think in terms of all the build up stuff, all the kind of like progression. He strips Telles in that, I think, who is very good at set pieces, has brilliant delivery, probably the best set piece deliverer, corner taker in the team. But I think Shaw is still ahead of him in that regard, I would say. But I think Shaw's good enough. I think Shaw is like, you know, he is a modern fullback in that sense. With Wan-Bissaka, I think the issue is that he's very good at certain things and like everything Mo's highlighted in terms of his one-on-one defending. It's great, but I don't know if it's a role that is even that relevant or used that much really in elite level, top level football nowadays at teams like United, of the caliber that United. I think the Kyle Walker point is a brilliant point. He isn't the same. He isn't the Kyle Walker that was at Tottenham. He isn't the kind of attacking marauding wing back that he was there. But he plays at Manchester City and it's almost like a cheat code playing at City, because you have João Cancelo on the other side, who is the absolute epitome of everything you'd want in this. And Walker's almost
best coach in the world as well,
a back three, so. For like, could, yeah, exactly. To the point you were making, to build on those weaknesses in his game. He's got that, whereas United, there hasn't been that. I think he's a guy that looks brilliantly defensively, because you see him making that tackle and that's everything that we're always trained to see a defender do. And he does all of that, but there's other things like where he lets people go at the back post. He's got a really you know, quite a bit. It comes up time and again, that weakness that he's got there, where he just lets people loose at the back post and somebody scores on with a cross from the other side. He isn't, I don't think, the cheat code, the defensive cheat code that excuses for his lack of his limitations going forward. And we're talking about United. Like I said, we're talking about United. We're talking about a team that is top six, that would like to be competing in the latter rounds of the Champions League, let alone, you know, qualifying for, they're struggling to qualify for it at the minute, but they want to be at that level. They're going to spend a lot of time on the ball. They need width. They need, especially if they've got people cutting inside on the wings, they need fullbacks who can get forward and who can provide that. And I don't think Wan-Bissaka has ever really shown himself to be up to that level in an attacking sense. And the benefits, if you like, the pros don't outweigh the cons on the defensive side. You just have to watch. You honestly just have to watch a game where United are on the attack. They've got like settled possession in the opponent's half. And you just have to look and see how much space Wan-Bissaka is in. And he's in a lot of space because the opponents know that they can allow him that space. And because they're giving him space, it means that the players who can make something happen elsewhere on the pitch have less space around them. And that's the biggest problem that I feel. I never like to be so critical of players, but it feels like he is just a kind of a spot that anyone would come in and would think we need to do something there. And I think you've even seen that with Ranić, you know, where he was playing every single game, starting every single game under Solskjaer and the predecessors. Since Ranić's come in, Dalot suddenly starting his first league game in nearly a year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't think Dalot's any great shakes either, but it's just he can pass the ball. He can, yeah, like you said, you can trust him. He has the ball. You can know he's going to deliver across. And look, again, I'm the biggest Wan-Bissaka defender there is, but you have to be realistic about players. And, you know, in a system, you know, with, and again, at United, I'm always looking at, you know, United's best ball players in the bottom half of their team are the centre backs. So I was always, you know, I'm always like, I'm Mr. Unorthodox formation here. I'm like, you know, why don't you just let Maguire or Lindelof push up with the ball, and then Wan-Bissaka, instead of attacking, just stays back and defends, because he can defend brilliantly. You know, but that's the kind of situation you need to do, that kind of unorthodox thinking to get the most out of Wan-Bissaka, right? Which you could do, but Ragnick's not going to do that. That's not what he does. That's not his style of football at all. So it's probably not going to work for Wan-Bissaka at Man United, which is the saddest thing, because I'm a big fan. But again, like Mark says, he's not a modern fullback. He's a different kind of fullback. He's a throwback in many ways. And a better coach would have, a more adventurous coach would have found a way to use him. Like, I'm convinced if Bielsa had him, Bielsa would be playing with defensive midfield or something and just said, look, just tackle everything that moves. The way he used Gary Medel, Bielsa's Chile, sorry, just take that for a second. Bielsa's Chile, he put midfielders in defence in a back three and then had Medel in front of them, and Medel would just hit everything that moved. Wouldn't pass the ball. Their defenders would pass the ball. He would just hit everything that moved. So, you know, like someone like Bielsa would do something like that with Wan-Bissaka, right? But Solskjaer was not that kind of guy. And I think in many ways, that was sort of a really strange bit of scouting, in the sense that they clearly looked at him and they loved what he did defensively. Then why, you know, did they think they could make him into an attacker? I guess, I don't know. I don't think he's long from United. I think he won't play much more this season, barring injury. And I think he'll probably be moved on in the summer. My only hope is that he goes somewhere that can value and maximise his skill set, because he does have a very terrific skill set.
Very quickly, before we wrap up, I'm going to throw it across to you both. Strictly 30 seconds. Mark, I'll go to you first and then you, Mo. 2022, what is Manchester United's key objective, either in the January transfer window, before the end of the season, or before the end of the calendar year? What is Manchester United's number one objective to achieve, Mark?
In general? Oh, right, in general. Hire a manager?
In general.
Decide who's going to take charge of the team. At the top, let's do that first. And then, if we're talking in the transfer market, then I think it has to be the holding midfielder and it has to be right back. I think they're just glaring positions where there's absolutely a need for, there's holes in the team. And then if you want a third one, it's to trim the squad, which they absolutely have to do. They really should be trying to do that this month.
Mo, what's your pick? Go on.
Yeah, no, one objective, make top four, then sign a midfielder. Do both. You can't. Those are 1A and 1B. And then manager, obviously, as well. But yeah, they need top four. Then that's going to be hard, because Conte doesn't have any European football anymore.
Yeah.
Spurs are looking
hungry.
pretty good. But yeah, United need top four and they need a midfielder and they need a right back. Maybe they need a right back because Ethan Laird is on loan and Ethan Laird's very good. So maybe not a right back, but they need a midfielder. My God, they need a midfielder. Sign a midfielder and get James Garner back in, play him and just, yeah.
It is absolutely amazing that we do keep forgetting that come the summer, Manchester United won't, technically as it stands, have a permanent manager. All this talk of transfer targets and who's going to play in here and who's going to be playing there. In 6-7 months, technically, Manchester United, again, don't have a first-team manager. But, you know, who cares about those small details?
I mean, they're on about getting Ten Hag as well. Like, Ten Hag's Ajax, he's winning a title every year. Like, he's working for one of the best-run clubs in the world. He's not going to be like, yeah, I'll come manage this circus at Manchester.
And he's contracted up to the teeth as well, so yeah. That's going to be an issue for United, or a hurdle for United to get over in the summer. Right, we're going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. As always, Mo, Mark, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Great stuff, guys. Indeed, obviously, in 2022, much like Manchester United, we have got our key objectives. And number one is every week to bring you a fantastic podcast. Every week will either be a Premier League or European football talking point that we'll be getting stuck into. Myself and Mo, plus one other, will be back next week looking ahead to the transfer window and some of the big, big issues in football in 2022. Don't forget to check out the podcast then, and we'll speak to you again very, very soon.